Last week or actually 2 weeks ago, by the way, thank you, Pastor Catherine, for the fantastic job I hear you did last Sunday, and I bet it's true. But thank you. You guys are blessed to have just a whole bunch of great leadership in the life of the church, and I think every now and then we ought to remind each other of that. I did want to say one last piece about the Samaritan's purse thing, because, you know, I know that sometimes it's just a lot of hassle at Christmas time to go through all that. In the Latin churches, in the Church of God, at least where I've had a chance to work with some of them, the way they change their communities is through children. The public school systems are either non-existent or unavailable for the most part, and most of those churches, at least, they come together and they develop schools, and out of those schools they reach kids, and these kids that live in a community where they can't get an education anywhere else get it at church. And so when you're sending these boxes in the name of Christ, you're touching not just church kids, even though that was a storage room in a church. These are kids that come from multiple places in their culture, and what you did is something that will be significant in their lives. And I just think little pieces like that, sometimes we overlook how and underestimate how significant they can be. These kids sometimes wonder if God's forgotten them. And you help remind them of the fact that he hasn't. I got to thinking about that when I was looking at those boxes, though, because I knew kind of where I wanted to head this morning already with my message. And I think sometimes we think God's forgotten us, too. That somehow we've kind of slipped through the cracks, and that he's just a little bit unaware of our current plight, or for whatever reason he's chosen to kind of turn a deaf ear to our prayer. 2 weeks ago, we looked at that story about Moses and the burning bush. You remember that story. And, you know, the bush is burning, but it's not being consumed. And so he goes and he hears God. And basically in that story, God tells Moses, they have a job for you. And it's a big job and you can't do this job without me. So go do it, but I'll go with you. And Moses fusses back and forth until finally they get this arrangement worked out and Moses goes. But here's the thing. Moses went and did what God told him to do. But when he first, in his first encounter with Pharaoh, and he goes, Pharaoh, instead of saying, oh, well, because you said so, Moses, I'll let your people go. Pharaoh said, you know what, Moses, since you're trying to pull this on me, I think I'm going to make it harder on your people. And so he instructs the slave drivers to expect the same amount of productivity, but they'll no longer provide the straw. They have to gather the straw for their brick making. And so instead of making things better as he obeyed, things actually got harder. And so the children of Israel are kind of griping at Moses over that, right? And maybe rightfully so. I don't know. I think I might have been one of those that griped at him too. And so Moses in chapter 5 of Exodus, he comes back to the Lord and he said, Lord, why have you brought trouble upon this people? Is this why you sent me? Ever since I went to Pharaoh to speak in your name, he has brought trouble upon all this people, and you've not rescued your people at all. You ever feel like the harder you try, the worse it gets? I think sometimes We ought to just say to each other, you know, sometimes it gets really, really hard to continue to be obedient when you can't see immediate results of your obedience. And so the Lord and Moses have this conversation in chapter 6. And God says to him, look, I get it. I hear you. But then he tells Moses in beginning at the very end of this, or in the second verse of Exodus 6, he said, I'm the Lord. I appeared to Abraham, to Isaac, to Jacob as God Almighty. But by my name, the Lord, I did not make myself known to them. In other words, Moses, I've given you a greater revelation of myself than I gave any of your forefathers. Don't forget that. And I established my covenant with these people. And so he's reminding Moses, I've already made some promises here. And then in verse 5, he says, moreover, I've heard the groaning of the Israelites whom the Egyptians are enslaving, and I have remembered my covenant. I'm thinking about all those pieces of worship that we've already engaged in, and we're talking about this God that won't let us go, and we're asking, remember your people, remember your promise. And what we're finding out is that way back even in the time of Moses, God was reminding his people that I do know you, I do remember you, I know the promises I made for you, I will keep my promises to you. But hang on, because my time is not your time. But then he goes on, and he says, here's what I want you to tell these Israelites that are griping. I'm the Lord. And then listen to the series of I wills. I will bring you out from under the yoke of the Egyptians. I will free you from being slaves to them. I will redeem you with an outstretched arm and mighty acts of judgment. I will take you as my own people, and I will be your God. Then there's a you will stuck in there. Then you will know that I am the Lord your God, who brought you out from the yoke of the Egyptians. But then God's not finished. He keeps on going with some more I wills. I will bring you to the land I swore with uplifted hand to give to Abraham, to Isaac, to Jacob. I will give it to you as a possession. I am the Lord. Well, Moses reported this to the Israelites, but they didn't listen to him because of their discouragement and cruel bondage. You know, sometimes it takes a while before the I wills of God get through to us because we don't always see them immediately. I don't know if you've ever been to the Grand Canyon. Valerie and I were there a couple of years ago, and I can remember walking into the place where I was able to see just some piece of its majesty and splendor, and just, I mean, I'm not really a crying kind of person, but tears just flowed down my cheek when I realized that I serve the God who made this whole. Actually, it was a pretty powerful moment. I heard a story about a lady, though, that you know, you can take those donkey trips down into the canyon. Anybody ever do that? I didn't, but she did, and she was on her way down, and on the one that she was on was kind of kicking stones, and when the stones would go over the edge, you know, there's all the way down the bottom of the canyon, right? And it was starting to make her nervous because he was kind of shuffling his feet around a little bit, and she's trying to ride on this thing, and they're still pretty high up in the canyon on their way down to the bottom. And one of the guides looked at the other one. He could see her fear, and he looked at the other one and said, I thought we retired old Stumblefoot. not what you want to hear, but sometimes it feels like that's about where our life is, that instead of basing our lives on and building our lives on and standing our feet upon something that's dependable, you know, we look at life and we feel like it's so fragile and we don't know what's going to happen next. And every now and then we need to look at each other and say, hey, guess what? God is not a bit like Stumblefoot. He is a firm foundation. He is a solid rock. He is faithful and dependable, and he keeps his promises, and his word is always true, and he cannot tell a lie. And when he said that he would never leave us or forsake us, that meant exactly what it said. And so as we go through the course of our lives, we come across these times when it feels like we're just really lost. In fact, here's something I think I want to say to you today that's very, very important. We live in this world that is at times difficult and full of disappointment and hard to understand. And sometimes it seems that no matter how hard we try, things don't ever work out for us. You ever feel like that? I mean, even in our spiritual lives, we try so hard and it just doesn't seem to go our way. But in spite of that experience, one thing remains true. Even in the middle of things that seem impossible to understand, God is faithful to those who belong to him. He always remembers, and he always keeps his promises to us. I love to read material that Fred Smith wrote. If you Google Fred Smith, it might take a long time to find the right one. But this Fred Smith is the guy that started what was then known as Federal Express. It's kind of interesting. This corporation has become so massive that it's even better known by its shortened version, FedEx. Fred Smith is a committed Christian man who raised this company out of nowhere. But he writes, he's so down to earth. He tells about one of the memories that he has that really helped him understand how God doesn't forget about us. He said he was in this little donut shop once in Grand Saline, Texas. And there was this young couple sitting at the table next to his. And he was wearing overalls and she was wearing a gingham dress. And they were just kind of typical into town from the ranch kind of folks, and they finished eating their donuts, drinking their coffee, and he got up to pay the bill, and Fred says he noticed that she didn't get up and follow him, and instead he went and paid the bill, came back to the table, and then as he got back to the table, he stood right in front of her. And when he did, she reaches up and she puts her arms around his neck. And he lifted her up, revealing that she was wearing a full body brace. And he lifted her out of her chair and backed out the front door with her, all the way to his pickup truck with her hanging from his neck. And as he gently put her into the truck, everybody in this donut shop watched. It was just like one of those wow moments. And no one said anything until this waitress almost reverently said, "There's a man who took his vow seriously." You know, when you entered this relationship that you have with Jesus, what happened is that you entered into a covenantal relationship, a relationship of promise, a relationship where God says, "I will be your God, and you will be my child." And even when it feels like we're going through times when he surely must have forgotten us, or when he surely can't see us, or when surely if he would do what I need him to do, if he really loved me, if he really knew where I was, he would move, and he would move more quickly. And as I read this passage of Scripture, and I listen to the Hebrew children feeling that way, and I remember how we feel that same way so often, there's some things that just leap off the pages of this story to me. And one of those things is just very, very simple, and this is it. Even when we can't see his hand, he is faithful. Just because we can't see what he's doing doesn't mean that he forgot his promise to us, his covenant with us, his relationship to us, his lordship over us, his forgiveness of us. These people thought for a minute that it was going to get great because Moses was going to Pharaoh. So Moses goes to Pharaoh, and instead of it getting better, it gets worse. And so all of a sudden now, even Moses is saying, is this God? Is this why you sent me, to make things worse? I mean, didn't you say you were going to release your people from this bondage? And God says, I will. Over and over and over again in this conversation, he says, I will. They couldn't see his hand, but God remembered his covenant. He remembered his people. Most of you, even the least energetic football fan in the world, will remember the name Tony Dungy. Tony Dungy is a deeply committed Christian who in 2002 was fired by the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. It was kind of interesting that he got fired by Tampa Bay because they had been more successful under him than they had been under any other coach. You know, and they fire him, and his career, he thought, was over. And he tells a story about how badly it hurt and how deeply wounded he was, because they just had been beaten in the playoffs by the Philadelphia Eagles, and yet they were in the playoffs, and this was not a common experience for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And Dungy had led them to, I think, like five or six straight playoff appearances, and they were playing good football at the time. And he says that when he thinks back on that time, he remembered how his Christian faith that he took from his home was the thing that kept him going. And then, you know, he kind of bounced around a little bit and had some assistant coaching jobs. And then finally, when he was 1989, became the defensive coordinator for the Pittsburgh Steelers. And 4 years, Pittsburgh didn't make the playoffs. And so management told the head coach, who was Chuck Knoll then, you're going to have to make some changes in your staff or you're going to go. And so he demoted Dungy from defensive coordinator. By the way, he was the youngest defensive coordinator in the NFL at the time. But he was also the only African-American that had ever gotten to that place. And, you know, instead of taking the demotion, he resigned and kind of thought that his football career was over. He did a little stint as a secondary coach for Kansas City, worked some at Minnesota, but then he keeps thinking back to Tampa, and he said, I admit that when I was let go at Tampa Bay, I thought it was over, and I thought God was going to have to open up some other door. I thought he had forgotten me. And then in 2002, after having been fired from Tampa Bay, the Indianapolis Colts, anybody ever heard of them? They found Dungy, and in 2005, hardly seems possible that it could have been this long ago,
as the Colts played well and moved toward the postseason, Dungy and his family experienced every family's worst nightmare. And their oldest son, James, who was 18 years old, took his life in a hotel room in Tampa. And the reasons for his son's suicide seem to remain unknown. But Dungy says the experience only reinforces his belief that life has its peaks and valleys, but God is always there. He said, I received so many calls, so many letters, and so many emails after his death that let me know that God really does have plans, even in the midst of great pain. How do you celebrate in the midst of such agony? Yes, they were headed to the Super Bowl. They were moving forward as a football team, but his life was shattered. But he had this foundation in his life that says, you know what? God is with me in my tragedy. I don't have to understand. I don't have to get it. And it seemed like just when life was finally getting better, it got worse again. Ever feel that way? Maybe you haven't had the depths of despair of an 18-year-old child perishing. But just when you think the job is great, the company closes. Or just when you think the marriage is great, the spouse says they're leaving. Or just when you think the health is better, the doctor disagrees. Or just when you think you're getting closer and closer to God, you mess up and you wonder if he's going to be able to forgive you this time. You do what you know to do. You pray, you cry out to God, and no matter what you do, you look at life and it seems like it's getting worse, and that's where Moses was in this story, and he goes to God. But God responds and says, I will. Because I remember my people. I always remember my promises. I will not forget you. I am with you now. You just can't see my hand. There's an old song that a lot of churches used to hear back 20, 25 years ago that says, when you can't see his hand, trust his heart. And I want you to know that his heart is for you. And that he made a promise to you, and he made a promise to you, and he made a promise to me, and he will not forget it. And that makes me think of another piece of truth. Even when it doesn't seem like it, he's actually working for your good. Do you know something? God, I think we've said this before, and we'll probably say it again. That's okay, honey. I'm not going to fall. Sorry. God does not owe you a progress report. Okay? Just because you can't see him or it doesn't seem like it doesn't mean he isn't still working for your good. In fact, the Bible promises that he always is. I love the story about this monastery in Portugal. It was at the top of a 3,000-foot cliff. And the only way that you could get up there was by this really terrifying ride in this basket that was actually raised the 3,000 feet by rope. This American tourist who visited the monastery got really nervous about halfway up the cliff, because he looked at the rope and he said, you know, it was old and frayed and didn't look all that safe. And he looked at the monk that was traveling up with him and he said, how often do you change the rope? And he said, whenever it breaks. You know, discovering halfway halfway up the mountain doesn't leave you a lot of security when you see that you're only being held by a frayed rope. But see, a lot of people think that they have no better security in their relationship to God. They just kind of gauge it by how the day goes. They kind of gauge it by the circumstances they face. They kind of gauge it by the opposition they face. But can I tell you something? That no matter how dark the night, joy comes in the morning, because God is always at work for your good. Even when it doesn't seem like it, He is working for your good. So today, maybe you feel forgotten. Maybe you feel like it's been a while since you've seen the movement of God in your life. Maybe you don't know what He's up to. And maybe the things that you're having to go through are hard to fit into this whole idea. That's why the passage of Scripture that comes in chapter 8 of Romans, in the 28th verse, that says that in everything that happens in our lives, God is working for good, for those who love Him and who are fitting their lives into His purpose. Now, don't misuse that promise. So many people say, well, everything happens for a reason, and God caused this for my... No, God doesn't bring bad things into your life. God doesn't do you harm just to prove that He's good. I mean, think about the logic there. But when the circumstances of your life, or when the enemy of our soul, or when just the fallen world that we live in brings you to these places where we struggle and we can't see God's hand and we wonder if He's forgotten us, I promise you, because He promises us that He's still working for your good, you just don't know it. And so what you can do is you can trust in that. Not that what you're going through is good, but that God is working for your good. Do you see the difference? And that makes me be able to say this to you. Even when we can't see the outcome, our future is in His hands. Okay? Let me say that again, because I think that's really critical. Even when we can't see the outcome, our future is in His hands. It's as if He's already there, beckoning us to come on. Even while He stands beside us with His arm around us in our pain, says, "Let's go." That's the kind of awesome God that we serve. Casting Crowns sings the song. It talks about how when God looks at our lives and we look at our future, He's already there. And what an incredible thought to think that when we can't see the outcome, when we can't predict what's going to happen, we just don't know, God still has our future, our lives, our hearts, our well-being in our hands. Back in the day that we used photography studios differently than we do now, before the big digital photography things came along, and a guy had a framed picture of his girlfriend, and he wanted to get it duplicated. So he goes into this place, because back in that day you had to do that, right? And so when the photographer took the picture out, he saw the inscription. It said, "My dearest Tom, I love you with all my heart. I love you more and more each day." And it was signed Diane, but it had this little PS: "If we ever break up, I want this picture back." Hey, God will never break up with you. He has your future and your present right in the palm of His hand. And so even if you can't see His hand at work,
even if it seems like he just doesn't see you right now, even if it feels like what you're going through can't possibly be something he's aware of, even when it hurts so bad and seems so discouraging that you wonder why God's letting this happen to you, I want you to know that he is the God who remembers. Back to that text. It says two things in there I want you to take home with you. And number one is, I remember my promise. I remember the covenant I made with you. And when I made that covenant, covenant making means I tie myself, I bind myself to my word. And so, the God who remembers is the one who bound himself to be your God. And then the other piece of that is that part of that covenant that he remembers is that not only will he be our God, but we will be his people. And if we are his, then our life is in his hands. And even when we can't see what he's doing, and even when we have doubts, and even when we struggle, it doesn't change who God is. And so when you can't see his hand and you're going through life, and it feels like every time you pray or the harder you try, it just gets worse. Please remember that he remembers. And that matters so very much. Would you pray with me? Our Father, as we think today about our own lives, we realize that we all have good days and bad days, and sometimes the bad days kind of pile up into bad months, or sometimes even longer. And in those times, we want to complain, and we want to say, "Where are you?" And we want to know what's going on. And what we end up doing is we end up losing our capacity to trust in you. And I pray that in this moment you would remind every one of us that you are the God who remembers. You remember your promise to us. And if you promised us, if you said you'd be with us, and if you said we are your children, then nothing can ever change that. We cling to the simple truth that in the midst of our groaning, in the midst of our crying out to you, that you remember that moment we entered into this covenant relationship with you, and that we are your children, and that your love for us is incredible and it's unconditional. And so we ask that you would speak words of encouragement and hope to every person in this room, because you are the God who remembers. Amen.